Kol HaLashon, the entire Torah, everywhere.
In the decades surrounding World War II, and in the 50 years that preceded it, Orthodox Jewry found itself navigating an unprecedented crossroad. Different communities had different screams and temperaments how to deal with the relentless onslaught of modernity. And suddenly, these different communities and different streams and temperaments were suddenly pressed together after World War II, face to face, each carrying its own strategy for surviving this relentless onslaught of modernity. On one side stood those who had absorbed modernity's surface, clean-shaven, Western in dress and hairstyle, shaped by the winds of change, yet inwardly carrying deep Torah convictions. On the other side stood those who had yielded nothing, their lives, their dress, their conduct, all mirrored the world of 2 centuries prior, utterly unchanged by the passage of time or the pressures of the surrounding culture. This tension burst into public view a few years before World War II, when the Reb Chaim Zonnenfeld, the towering Pesach and guardian of Yerushalayim's sanctity, chose to welcome the Chevron Yeshiva to settle in Yerushalayim. His decision was not without fierce opposition. The Kanoim of Yerushalayim, the guardians of the old Meisharim spirit, were deeply unsettled. The Chevron students, products of the Musa tradition of Kelim, appeared to them like emissaries of a foreign world, modern, Western, dangerously close to the line. Yet Reb Yosef Chaim saw deeper. In the Lashon of Pirkei Avos, Kan Kan Chodosh Mole Yoshon, a new barrel filled with old wine. The vessel may appear new, but what flows within it is ancient and pure. These modern-looking Bali Musa, beneath their exteriors, carried authentic Torah ideals. Nevertheless, the Kanoim's concern was not baseless. If the children grow up seeing this as the image of an Orthodox Jew, what will they think? This same tension played out a few years later in a different arena when the pioneering Wolf Seminary, Rav Wolf, sought to establish a girls' institution of higher learning in Eretz Yisrael. The idea was radical for its time. Young women living in a dormitory, learning Ramban, studying Torah at an advanced level, away from their family homes. Chazon Ish gave counterintuitive advice. He says, don't open the seminary in Meisharim. The old Yerushalmi community there would never absorb such an innovation. Posters would go up on the walls. Protests would possibly fill the streets. And the girls arriving with idealism, with the beautiful energy of someone beginning something holy, would be crushed. His reasoning struck at the heart of Chinuch. He says a person being educated must feel that they're doing something like Atchile, they're striving for the highest, the first-rate thing, what Hashem truly wants.
Kol HaLashon.
Once a cloud of being b'di'eved descends, once a student feels at the best they're only second-class Jews, that she's merely tolerated rather than celebrated, the fire goes out, the motivation dies. It snuffs out the enthusiasm. Therefore, open the seminary in Bnei Brak, the Chazon Ish said, in that newer, more modern city, the same institution would be received, and the students could embrace their learning with joy, dignity. Another parallel episode unfolded around language. The Chazon Ish initially instructed his Talmud, Reb Shlomo Kayin, to send children to a Talmud Torah that conducted its learning entirely in Yiddish, the historic language of Ashkenazic Torah transmission for many, many centuries. But when reality intervened, when it became clear that Sephardic children that didn't speak Yiddish also needed proper Torah institutions and couldn't be expected to learn in a language foreign to them, the Chazon Ish adapted, and he permitted the yeshivas to speak Ivrit, modern Hebrew, as the language of the Talmud Torah. The principle he invoked was simple and profound. If insisting on Yiddish will mean losing children entirely, driving away families who need maestris but can't access them, then the Yiddish must be given away. The lekatchila of Torah comes first. But there was a rival school of thought. They argued the opposite. Don't allow people to live in ignorance. Tell them clearly what they're doing is a b'dieved, a deviation from the ideal. Tell them when they had already moved a mile from the katchila so that they don't move another mile away. The classic illustration was the shetel. Many Paiskim regarded the shetel, the wig worn by married women to fulfill the mitzvah of hair covering, as far from ideal. The truly preferred head covering, according to strict opinion, is a tichel, a mitpachat. Knowing this, this school argued, serves as a guardrail. Once a woman knows she's already at b'dieved, she will at least hold the line and not drift further. From modest synthetic to human hair, from human hair to an elaborate styled shetel with a wide part, from there to lace fronts, and onward into territory that bears no resemblance to the spirit of the mitzvah. But the opposing view strikes back with force. What are you doing to this woman? She made a meaningful sacrifice. She covers her hair faithfully day after day. In a society that finds this strange, she's committed herself to tznius in a world that mocks it. And now you come and tell her after everything you're doing, you should know you're just b'dieved. Hashem is not really satisfied with you. You're a second-class citizen. What will that do? It will rob her of the simcha of the mitzvah. It will extinguish the joy she takes in her avodas Hashem. You cannot motivate a person by perpetually reminding them that their best is not good enough. This is the double-edged sword that hangs over so many areas of halachic and hashkafic guidance. Should a leader keep the masses in a state of ignorance is bliss, allowing them to feel that what they do is precisely what Moshe Rabbeinu would have wanted? Or should he be honest, acknowledging, as the Chafetz Chaim himself put it, that what we're doing is often b'cheir harab b'meutoi, choosing the least bad option, selecting the best from a menu of compromises? There is no single simple answer. The Chazon Ish chose one path in one context and a different path in another. The great Paiskim understood that the same principle can lead to opposite practical conclusions depending on the community, the individual, the matziv, the moment. What emerges is a profound lesson about Torah leadership. The job of a rav, a rosh yeshiva, a mechanech, is not merely to know the halacha. It's to know the person, to ask not only what does halacha say, but what does this person in this situation need to hear in order to remain standing and steadfast. To guard the flame, not by dousing it with cold water or of perpetual inadequacy, and not by feeding it on the illusions of flaherty, but by tending it with wisdom, with compassion, and with clarity of Torah truth. And sometimes the barrel may be new. The wine within it may be very, very old. Our task is to ensure the wine never spills.
Kol HaLashon. A whole world of quality content.